will have an amazing Tuesday.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is asking Western leaders to help overcome Russia's weapons advantage by supplying more modern tanks, artillery, ammunition, rockets, and air defense systems. In a video address Monday to Group of Seven industrial country leaders, he also called on Russia to begin withdrawing from territory it's occupying on Christmas. The Kremlin has rejected all previous appeals to reverse its land grabs in Ukraine. U.S. President Joe Biden is set to play host to dozens of African leaders in Washington this week in the lead-up to the three-day U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit that begins Tuesday. Biden administration officials played down their increasing concern about the clout of China and Russia in Africa.
And with this announcement that over the next 3 years, we will be devoting $55 billion to help address these top priorities in very specific, tangible ways in partnership with African nations.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, as the White House has also said, Biden will use the gathering to declare his support for adding the African Union as a permanent member of the Group of 20 Nations. Supporters of far-right Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro on Monday attempted to invade the federal police headquarters in Brasilia, the capital, protesting the arrest of an indigenous leader in the first major flash of post-election violence. Bolsonaro supporters wearing their trademark yellow national soccer jerseys could be seen rushing from the scene with sticks and throwing rubble. It came on the same day that the Federal Electoral Court certified the election victory of Bolsonaro's leftist rival Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva as president. This is VOA News. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has announced his intention to fully open the border crossings with Colombia starting January 1st, a measure repeatedly postponed following the restoration of diplomatic and commercial ties between the South American neighbors. Relations between the countries were broken off in 2019, but Maduro has said the environment is conducive to improved ties with the election of leftist Gustavo Petro as Colombia's president. The neighbors resumed diplomatic relations in September. Peru's newest president, Dina Boluarte, has given in to protesters' demands, announcing in a nationally televised address she will send Congress a proposal to move up elections. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Boluarte says she wants to interpret the will of the citizenship, so has decided to assume the initiative and reach an agreement with the Congress of the Republic to bring forward the general elections for the month of April 2024. The new president's speech comes after thousands of demonstrators rallied in Peru for another day on Sunday to demand that she resign and elections be rescheduled. The protests turned deadly, officials saying there were at least two reported deaths in a remote community in the Andes. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A Libyan intelligence operative suspected of making the bomb that blew up Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, in 1988, killing 270 people, appeared in a federal court in Washington on Monday ahead of being formally charged. It comes nearly 34 years after a bomb on board the plane, which was flying from London to New York, killed all 259 people on board. This week marks the 10th anniversary of the tragic U.S. school shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in the northeastern state of Connecticut. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
There are no official ceremonies, keeping with Newtown's tradition of marking anniversaries of the December 14th, 2012 shooting with quiet reflection. Liz Dosher was a third grader at the time.
I feel like the farther and further we move away from it, the more I feel I'm scrambling to just remember.
Nicole Hockley, who lost her son Dylan, says she's turned her grief into advocacy through her organization, Sandy Hook Promise.
It has to become better with fewer shootings. I mean, I think it's in the last 10 years, one of the numbers I've seen is that we're at 1 million people.
I'm Julie Walker.
I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, December 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukraine appeals for high-tech air defense systems to counter Russian drone attacks on power infrastructure.
Ukraine's power provider says the situation in the country's energy system has remained difficult after Russian attacks, particularly in Odessa, that suffered massive power cuts.
The European Union discusses ninth set of sanctions against Russia for invading Ukraine.
It's clear that Putin is trying to freeze Ukrainian people into submission, deliberately depriving millions of Ukrainians of water, electricity, and heating.
And U.S. scientists make breakthrough in fusion energy. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukraine's presidential office says that at least two civilians have been killed and six others have been wounded by the latest Russian shelling. This as Ukraine's prime minister appealed for Patriot missile batteries and other high-tech air defense systems to counter Russian attacks that have knocked out electricity and water supplies for millions of Ukrainians. Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal spoke in an interview ahead of a Paris conference to raise and coordinate more international aid for Ukraine. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Russian military is shelling areas near Bakhmut in the eastern Donbas region, with fighting at multiple points. The Ukrainian governor of the Russia-occupied Luhansk region, Serhiy Haidai, has said a Ukrainian strike on Kadivka on Sunday hit a hotel that served as the headquarters for the Wagner Group, a Russian military contractor. He charges that hundreds of Russians were killed, a claim that cannot be independently verified. Ukraine's power provider says the situation in the country's energy system has remained difficult after Russian attacks, particularly in Odessa, that suffered massive power cuts. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell said Russian President Vladimir Putin had not been able to achieve his objective in Ukraine because of the robust sanctions by member countries of the group. Borrell said the group is still working on a ninth package of sanctions after a meeting with its EU counterparts in Brussels.
We discussed the ninth sanctions package against Russia, against the Kremlin, for escalating its aggression against Ukraine. But on that, we'll give more details later. We have to continue working. It's clear that Putin is trying to freeze Ukrainian people into submission, deliberately depriving millions of Ukrainians of water, electricity, and heating. These are war crimes. To put millions of people into the cold and darkness, willing to froze them in the middle of the winter, that's a war crime. What they need is support. And that's what Kuleva has asked us, with a concrete list of requests from financial to military to training support. We have to continue supporting Ukraine.
That's European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell. European Union member states expressed alarm Monday over allegations that Qatar bribed some European Parliament members to influence their decision-making. One of the body's vice presidents has been arrested and charged in connection with the scandal. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Heading into a meeting of European Union foreign ministers, the bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, expressed concern over the corruption allegations, even as he cautioned it was important to stick to the facts and proven evidence.
Certainly the news are very worrisome, very, very worrisome.
In the latest twist to one of the European Union's biggest scandals to date, Athens on Monday froze the assets of the European Parliament's Greek vice president, Eva Kaili, one of four people whom Belgium investigators arrested on corruption charges, reports say. Kaili's party in Greece also suspended the former television news anchor. Investigators are looking into allegations World Cup host Qatar paid large bribes to influence the parliament's policy debates. The investigators reportedly found large bags of cash in Kaili's home. She has been stripped of her parliamentary responsibilities, which included representing the body's president, Roberto Metsola, in the Middle East.
Das ist wirklich ein unglaublicher Vorfall, der muss jetzt
Germany's Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said Europe's credibility was at stake. Other top EU diplomats expressed similar concern. Here's Irish Foreign Minister Simon Coveney.
Well, it is damaging, and we need to get to the bottom of it, and we need to have obviously a full and transparent investigation so that we can have an explanation for what's happened.
The Reuters news agency reports an official from Qatar has denied any misconduct by the country. The European Parliament was scheduled to vote this week on a measure to extend visa-free travel to several countries, including Qatar. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
An international price cap on Russian oil has inadvertently caused a logjam of supertankers outside Istanbul as Ankara imposes new regulations despite Western pressure. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Dozens of the world's largest supertankers have been stuck outside Istanbul, victims of an escalating spat between Turkey and its Western allies. Since the introduction of the Russian oil price cap, Ankara has been demanding insurance guarantees for all tankers using Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway, a necessity, experts say, given the dangers posed to Turkey's largest city. Mithat Rende is a former Turkish ambassador to Qatar and an energy consultant.
If a tanker carrying crude oil or refined oil and transiting, passing through the Turkish Straits and especially passing through Istanbul, a city of 16 million people, the goods will be insured and then the straits will be insured against oil spills and against collisions because the problem is oil spills and collision.
Under the new sanctions against Moscow, insurers are barred from serving tankers if the Russian oil they carry is sold above the price cap. Western insurers argue Ankara's demand for blanket insurance guarantees could expose them to sanctions if the insured tanker's cargo violates the international price cap. But with Ankara imposing its insurance demands on all tankers, including those not carrying Russian oil, Washington is voicing frustration. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
We've been in touch with Turkey about how the price cap only applies to Russian oil and explained that the cap doesn't necessitate additional checks on ships passing through Turkish waters. Our understanding is that virtually all of the delayed tankers are not carrying oil from Russia and are not affected by the cap.
Russian tankers are complying with Ankara's demand with their domestic insurance, circumventing the international sanctions. Some analysts suggest Ankara could be looking for concessions from its allies. Yurko Shuk is a geopolitical analyst in Istanbul with the Washington-based Middle East Institute.
This government and the Turkish president likes to play, exert its power and make deals on separate issues. If the issue cannot be resolved, then it will become a problem. Now, the more worrisome thing, it looks like we are in an impasse.
Ankara has several ongoing disputes with Washington, including one over the purchase of U.S. fighter jets currently stalled in the U.S. Congress. But in a sign of possible progress, five tankers passed through Istanbul on Monday. Given the winter conditions in the Northern Hemisphere, analysts say the deal cannot come soon enough. Mithat Rende, energy consultant.
Dangerous to let oil tankers heavily loaded with crude oil to be sitting just 20 or 30 kilometers away from here, from the Turkish Strait or from Istanbul.
With more tankers en route to Istanbul, analysts say the pressure is on for a solution to the ongoing impasse. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Thank you, Dorian. And scientists at a U.S. lab have made a breakthrough on fusion energy, the process that powers the sun and stars, two sources with knowledge of the matter said on Monday. Chris Dinham of Reuters reports.
A potentially major scientific breakthrough in fusion energy that could one day provide a cheap source of electricity. According to two sources with knowledge of the matter, scientists at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California for the first time ever have produced a nuclear fusion reaction resulting in a net energy gain in an experiment using lasers. Fusion works when nuclei of two atoms are subjected to extreme heat of more than 100 million degrees Celsius or 180 million degrees Fahrenheit, causing them to fuse into a new larger atom, giving off enormous amounts of energy, the same process that powers the sun and stars. But the process consumes vast amounts of energy, and the trick has been to make the process self-sustaining and to get more energy out than goes in, and to do so continuously instead of brief moments. If fusion is commercialized, which backers say could happen in a decade or more, it would have additional benefits, including the generation of virtually carbon-free electricity, which could help in the fight against climate change, without the amounts of radioactive nuclear waste that today's fission reactors produce.
That's Chris Dinham of Reuters. In other news, clashes erupted on Monday during an opposition protest in Montenegro, reflecting a deep political crisis between the pro-Western and pro-Serb and pro-Russian camps in the small Balkan country that is a member of NATO. Police used pepper spray against hundreds of protesters who threw rocks, bottles and other objects during a demonstration outside the Montenegrin parliament. The protest was held as lawmakers inside the building voted to strip the pro-Western president of a decisive role in electing the prime minister. The laws was pushed forward by the pro-Serb and pro-Russian majority in the parliament, angering the pro-Western opposition. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Pakistan and Afghanistan officials met today to diffuse tensions along the command border between the southwestern Balochistan province. The meeting follows clashes that erupted between their security forces Sunday, leading to the death of several civilians. Islamabad said heavy gunfire and artillery shelling by Afghan border forces killed about seven civilians while injuring over 20, and its forces retaliated, causing unspecified number of casualties on Taliban fighters. Afghan official Noor Ahmed in Kandahar, the province on the Afghan side of the border, told Reuters the incident was an accident. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gaul.
Both sides suffered casualties, although on the Pakistani side, the seven deaths that have occurred were all civilians, and even those injured in the firing from the Afghan side were also civilians. The retaliation from the Pakistani troops, according to officials, inflicted casualties on Taliban combatants or Taliban border security forces. Today, the national parliament was informed by the defense minister, Khwaja Asif. Interestingly, he said that the Taliban government admitted that it was the mistake on part of Taliban border security forces that this clash erupted, and that the Taliban government has submitted an apology, and after which the issue was amicably settled. This is what the Pakistani defense minister said, and he also revealed in the process that the retaliation by the Pakistani troops in fact killed nine Taliban border security forces.
Reports are the border between Pakistan and the Taliban in Afghanistan is heavily fortified. How could such an incident have happened? And analysts are saying this just might be an example of how a little incident can spark a broader conflict in that volatile area.
Give you some historic context and what prompted this clash yesterday. Pakistan, in the last 5 or 6 years, unilaterally erected a very robust fence along the entire 2,600-kilometer frontier with Afghanistan. This was a unilateral effort because no government in Afghanistan over the past many decades has ever accepted this boundary line between the two countries, which was demarcated by the former British colonial rulers. And the Afghan government, whichever government it has been in Kabul, always objected to this fencing by Pakistan, because they continue to dispute this demarcation. And what happened yesterday, that some Taliban forces in recent days had damaged a portion of the fence that Pakistan had erected recently. And Pakistani troops were sent yesterday to repair that fence. When the Pakistani team arrived on the scene, instead of facilitating or helping the Pakistani side to repair the damage. The Taliban, according to the defense minister who spoke in the parliament today, they used this military vehicle, the American Humvee, and they struck that remaining portion of the fence and destroyed it and warned the Pakistani side that if they go ahead and try to repair it or erect this fence again, they're going to take even more serious action. But Pakistani forces did not listen to the Taliban warning and they went ahead. And that's when both sides started firing at each other. In fact, the Taliban opened the fire first to warn the Pakistanis to back off. And that's when Pakistanis retreated to their post and then the clashes began. But in those clashes, no harm was inflicted on either side. However, later on, Taliban, according to the defense minister, started heavy shelling, and one of the mortars in the process then hit a hotel in the civilian population. And that's where most of the casualties occurred.
That's VOA Elsgo speaking with me from Islamabad. South Africa's ruling African National Congress is kicking off its party conference this week amid a leadership crisis and dwindling public support. The divided party will have to decide whether to keep the current president in power, a decision that could drastically change the political landscape in the country. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
In the township of Soweto, where South Africa's ruling African National Congress, or ANC, penned its first draft of the country's post-apartheid constitution, residents say they feel like they've been forgotten by the party. Aged government housing has been crumbling, and a fire earlier this year wiped out several homes. Roughly 20 families have been relocated, not to brick-and-mortar homes, but to corrugated iron shacks that have no water or electricity. 62-year-old Martha Meyer is among the residents.
Dump us here and nobody come and look after us. It's raining and the wind blow the roofs and everything, and they said must take our own money to fix it.
The replacement of brick homes with tin shacks is emblematic of the failures of the ANC to provide basic services, residents like Meyer said. It's why she and many others have stopped supporting the party that won them freedom from racial segregation nearly 30 years ago.
Not vote for the ANC. They do nothing for us. They just eat the money and sit in the office and Cyril Ramaphosa just sit and relax. The ANC is no good. They're crooks.
The declining support for the party is worrying as it holds its leadership conference this Friday. President Cyril Ramaphosa is facing contestation for party and country leadership amid a scandal over his handling of large sums of foreign currency stolen from his prize game farm. But in Soweto, community activist Griselda Swartz says most people don't care whether Ramaphosa survives or is replaced.
People still feel that it's the same party, it's the same people, it's the same principle. So it boils down to the same people working in the same offices, even though they changed the leadership position.
University of Pretoria political scientist Roland Henwood warns the ousting of Ramaphosa would be disastrous for the party that is eyeing the 2024 general election.
With Mr. Ramaphosa, it is possible that they can get 50% plus. Without him, it is unlikely. On average, Mr. Ramaphosa is 10 to 12 percentage points more likable and gets more support than the party itself.
Regardless of whether Ramaphosa survives, a bigger political crisis is underway due to the disengagement of voters. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Artemis 1 unmanned lunar mission came to an end on Sunday, December 11th, when its Orion spacecraft splashed down into the Pacific Ocean at 1740 UTC. The mission served as a flight test for the Orion spacecraft, the powerful new Space Launch System rocket, and the upgraded exploration ground systems at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. According to a NASA press release, over its 25-and-a-half-day mission, Artemis performed two lunar flybys, which brought the Orion spacecraft to within 129 kilometers of the moon's surface and flying to nearly 435,000 kilometers from Earth at its furthest point. The U.S. Space Agency used the mission to check out the Orion in the severe environment of deep space before trying to fly humans to the moon aboard Artemis II, which is now scheduled for launch in 2024. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint. Or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours. At voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Gino Ruffo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The alliance between the United States and the Philippines is based on deep historical, economic, and cultural ties and shared democratic values. Vice President Kamala Harris's recent trip to the Philippines reaffirmed the importance of the relationship and offered an opportunity to discuss expanding cooperation and investment on a range of issues, including advancing clean energy, facing common security challenges, and supporting freedom of the seas. The vice president met with Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos in Manila on November 21st to discuss new initiatives. The following day, she traveled to Puerto Princesa in the Philippine province of Palawan at the edge of the South China Sea. In remarks aboard a Philippine Coast Guard ship, Vice President Harris announced additional areas of cooperation. These include new U.S. funding to Philippine maritime law enforcement agencies to counter illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, which presents a direct threat to coastal ecosystems and economies. The United States, she said, has also stepped up efforts to provide the Philippines and other countries in the region with a wider and more accurate picture of their territorial waters. A U.S. partner organization is launching new satellites so that more space-based platforms can deliver a common operating picture of critical Indo-Pacific waterways and increase their maritime domain awareness capabilities so our allies and partners can better protect vulnerable fisheries, respond to humanitarian disasters, and detect and counter illicit activities. The Vice President praised the Philippine Coast Guard, which is on the front lines of standing up for the international rules-based order. She noted the intimidation and attempts at coercion experienced by the Philippines from the PRC as Beijing asserts its expansive and illegal South China Sea maritime claims. The United States stands with the Philippines, she said. We will continue to rally our allies and partners against unlawful and irresponsible behavior. We must stand up for principles such as respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity, unimpeded lawful commerce, the peaceful resolution of disputes, and the freedom of navigation and overflight in the South China Sea and throughout the Indo-Pacific, declared Vice President Harris. When the international rules-based order is threatened somewhere, it is threatened everywhere. Vice President Harris ended her address with a message. The United States-Philippines alliance is strong. We are committed to you. We are committed to your success and to all the lives and livelihoods that rely on your work.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.